From the earliest days of movies, filmmakers like Georges Méliès have employed visual tricks to entertain and amaze audiences. Since then, special effects have grown increasingly more sophisticated, making things like floods, explosions, spaceflight, and extraterrestrials seem lifelike and realistic. On this week's Please Explain, we thought that we'd find out how some of this movie magic is created. So we've invited Dr. Doug Robel, the creative director of software at Digital Domain, the multiple Academy Award-winning visual effects studio in Venice, California, to join us. Digital Domain has produced the visual effects for a wide range of films, including Pirates of the Caribbean, Real Steel, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Star Trek, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Flags of Our Fathers, The Day After Tomorrow, Titanic, Apollo 13, and True Lies. Welcome to our show.
Hi.
We also invite our listeners to join in the conversation. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. So at what stage in the movie-making process do directors approach a company like yours, Digital Domain, to talk about special effects?
Wow, that's a good question. At the very beginning, the visual effects isn't really considered at all. It depends. It actually really depends on the kind of movie. So when you're first starting out with a movie, you get a script, and you get the director, and basically they're looking for money. And they go around looking for money, and eventually a production studio will decide, hey, we're going to want to make this movie. And so they start putting together all the facets of the movie that, or the things that they're going to need to make the movie, and that includes actors and the crew that's going to film it, and they're going to start scouting locations. And all during this time, the amount of money that they're going to be spending on the movie goes up and up and up, and eventually they'd say, hey, this movie's going to need some special effects too. So then they turn to places like us.
Well, are they created as the movie is being filmed, or are most of them done in post-production?
Actually, nowadays, most of them are done in pre-production. As they're putting the movie together, they've come up with the script, they decide how they're going to film it. It's way too complicated to film some of these visual effects scenes without actually figuring out how they're going to do it beforehand. So storyboards are created, and in fact, nowadays, storyboards have gotten extremely complicated. Storyboards used to be just a very talented artist drawing something on a piece of paper. Now, storyboards look like video games. They're animated. You almost get to see the entire movie before the movie is actually made, because you're just sort of watching it as a video game being played out in front of you. And actors can look at the storyboard and say, oh, okay, this is how I'm supposed to play this. Or especially us, we can look at that storyboard and say, oh, okay, the camera needs to be here. We need to put the monster over there. And so that means we're going to have to put lights here, and we're going to have to put a screen or something to make it easy to put the monster over there. And it really guides how the whole process is done.
Of course,
things never always go according to how the storyboard does, so you always have to have people on set going, oh my gosh, well, we didn't realize there was going to be a tree there, so we're going to have to deal with that.
These days, are all the special effects created with computers?
Pretty much. You know, it depends, again, on the kind of special effect. The computer is so versatile and gives you so much freedom to do stuff, but there's a certain look, like Hugo this year did a lot of visual effects that were basically in camera. They were doing a tribute to the old time movie making, and they wanted to say, well, let's see if we can not use the computer for this entire movie. Let's see if we can do it old school. And so they did a lot of what's called in camera effects, where you do double exposures, you use green screens or mats or whatever to actually do the effect that they want on the screen. They have, not to say they didn't use computers, they used a ton of computers in that movie, but they also did some old school stuff.
Well, I want to get to the green screens and all of the other things that have been done over the years, but let's talk about CGI, because I think that's what most people are interested in today. It really seems to have changed movies. What is CGI, computer-generated imagery, exactly? And how is it created?
Well, you know, in order to talk about that, it's actually good to go back and talk about the old-school way of doing it, which is, You point a camera at something, you let light enter the camera, and it exposes film, right? And so the old way of doing visual effects was photographically trying to control how the light got to the film. So if I wanted to insert King Kong or put somebody in some magical place, what I'd often do is film the actor against a black background. Just, man, this is the easiest of all possible visual effects, where you film an actor against a black background. Now, what happens is the light bounces off the actor and goes into the camera and exposes the film. The light doesn't bounce off the black background. That's why it's black, and no light is coming back from that. And so the film doesn't get exposed in the areas that are in the background, right? So what you've ended up with is a piece of film where that you can see the actor, and then everything else is basically raw film. Nothing has happened to the film back then. No light has gotten to the bits and pieces of that one frame where the actor wasn't. So now you can take that film and roll it back and then put the background that you want in there. And so now light is coming through all the area of the image, and what was previously unexposed now gets exposed with the background. Now, because the actor was in there, you're getting a bit of a double exposure. You're going to see something behind the actor as well, because that film, that part of the film is getting light twice. But that's the easiest way of doing visual effects, is kind of doing a double exposure where you're actually controlling where the light goes.
And that was right, black, so and that was in black and white films. Then color comes along.
Black and white, that's back in the late 1800s when this kind of technique was invented.
Mm-hmm.
But now, flash forward, and what we were doing basically is just controlling how the light got to the film. Now, inside the computer, we're generating the entire image. We can use all the math and all the software that we've built to actually control how the light works. And so instead of relying on a set and an actor and all this kind of stuff, we can basically create that inside the computer, just like a video game or anything. And then the camera doesn't even exist. It's a completely virtual camera. And so the computer-generated imagery takes out all the reality of the situation. We've basically erased the light on the set and the camera and the film and replaced it completely with computer stuff. And that's where the fun comes in, because what we try to do at visual effects companies is, now that the computer is responsible for generating the image, we have to try to mimic reality as much as possible with our algorithms and the mathematics of the scene, or the process. And that's where it gets really hard.
Well, then I get confused sometimes about where the line between CGI and animation is drawn. Are movies like Toy Story or Up entirely CGI, or are they going back to some older school approaches?
Nope, they are completely computer generated. So what that means is, let's use an example from like Toy Story. So you've got Woody talking to a character in the movie, and remember, nothing is real. There's no camera, there's no set, there's nothing. It's all just artists sitting in front of the computer manipulating things. So the first thing they have to do is generate the background. So they'll have artists who are very good at, and they're called modelers. They build things out of nothing, where they build geometric representations of a set. And so they will slowly create a set of a room inside the computer, where all the walls of the room, all the books in the room, the carpet in the room, everything in the room is represented using what we call polygons. They're little triangles that represent the surface of things. And then we do the same thing with the character itself. So Woody gets built as a huge set of polygons that have controls on them that allow other artists who are very good at knowing how things move. We call these guys are animators. They animate the character that the modelers built. And then all this has to be rendered. The word render means basically, let's treat this sort of reality that we've created in the computer as if it's real, and we'll have a camera, we'll put lights in the scene, we'll mathematically figure out how the light bounces around in the scene, and basically pretend like we're exposing a piece of film, but we're actually doing it inside the computer. So what this does is it gives us control. The more effort that we put into it, the more detail that we put into it, the more real it looks. And so once we've done that, we can do anything. We can really fool you because all of a sudden we can create reality out of this.
But
it's great fun.
I'd imagine that eyes and mouths and hands are the hardest things to get right when you're creating a realistic, a Woody or some other figure with CGI.
You know, you're absolutely right. It turns out that when people are born, your visual system is extremely limited. In fact, babies, when they're first born, can only see about 4 feet in front of them for a good number of months after they've been born. And the reason that they can see 4 feet in front of them is because their mothers hold them, and 4 feet is enough so that the baby can focus on the mother's face. So right from the get-go, when you're born, your entire life is really defined by a human face that you're focusing on. So everyone on the planet is expert at recognizing human faces. And that's what we fight against, because remember, we're in the computer trying to generate reality and fool the audience into believing that what we've created in the computer is reality. And yet, everyone in the audience is absolutely awesome at figuring out what people look like. You're really good at recognizing faces. You're really good at watching people's mouths move while they talk. You're really good at analyzing expressions on faces. And so this is the most difficult part of the process that we do, is trying to create a face that would fool you into believing that it's an actual real person. And that's really the cutting edge of computer graphics. All the visual effects companies right now are trying to do that. You've seen it in Lord of the Rings with Gollum. We did it in Benjamin Button with Brad Pitt, an older version of Brad Pitt. We tried to do this in Tron with a younger version of Jeff Bridges. And it's very challenging. It's fascinating to try to... It's amazing because you see these things on the screen. And, of course, we are looking at these things daily. As the movie progresses, we try to get it better and better. And you look at the image on the screen and you go, you know, that looks awesome, but something about it is wrong. And then you try to tell somebody what that thing is that's wrong, and you just can't. It's something that's so innate into your knowledge that it's difficult to actually enunciate what's wrong with it.
Well, we saw it with the Toy Story films. The first ones felt less natural than the last ones. Obviously, people are figuring some of these things out. Dr. Doug Robel is my guest. He's creative director of software at Digital Domain, the multiple Academy Award-winning visual effects studio in California. This is WNYC, WNYC in New York. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, let's talk about The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, one of your films. It had some pretty impressive special effects. It won Oscars for best visual effects, best makeup, best art direction. So can you tell us how the old man character, who's still recognizable as Brad Pitt, was created using CGI?
Sure. So one of the first thing that starts out is you have to figure out what Brad Pitt is going to look like when he's 80 years old, right? And this is where the fact that there are so many talented artists in the Hollywood really comes into play, because what we did is we went and actually scanned Brad Pitt's face. We went in and got a really good 3D model of Brad Pitt's face. And then artists went to town on that. They had actual sculptors go in and create what they would expect Brad Pitt to look like as he's 80 years old. And when I say sculptors, I mean real sculptors. They produce these busts of Brad Pitt as an 80-year-old person.
In the past, you just would have done it with makeup, wouldn't you?
Well, that was going to be the trick, actually, especially with Benjamin Button, because remember what the movie was. It's a very odd story about this man being born old and growing younger as he progresses through time. And so the trick was, in the past, what you would have done was just hired somebody older who kind of looks like Brad Pitt, right? You'd mm-hmm. go, oh, okay, this guy's close enough, and that's that. But here, we needed somebody who looked like an 80-year-old Brad Pitt on a very small body, because he's born old, which means he's baby-sized, and then as he gets older, you know, progresses through time, he's actually getting younger, so he actually, instead of being a, it's very hard to explain, actually, but he's a young, small dude in a very old man's body, and what that basically means is there's nobody in the world that looks like we wanted it to look like. There was only one way to do this, and this was with digital effects, and in fact, you couldn't do it with makeup because it would look wrong. It would just, it just couldn't be done.
Well, does the makeup team work with the art directors on developing special effects?
Oh, absolutely. The makeup team is part of the sculpting, and in fact, the busts that were made of Brad Pitt as a 60-year-old man and as an 80-year-old man, these are unbelievably realistic busts. And in fact, it's a little creepy because you'd be walking around this company, and occasionally an artist would have the bust sitting on their desk for reference, and you'd walk by and you'd see basically this decapitated head sitting on somebody's desk, and you'd go, what the heck? And it was so realistic, it was disconcerting.
Now, so, yeah, go ahead.
Well,
I was going to ask you about American Werewolf in London, which is an earlier attempt at creating that kind of transition. But before morphing became part of what computers could offer, in that case, they used stop action. With makeup.
That's an incredibly painstaking process, and you really have to have a very patient actor as well, because what you're doing is stopping the camera, changing the makeup, turning the camera back on, then stopping the camera, changing the makeup, turning the camera back on, and all the while the actor is basically getting back into the same position. It's incredibly difficult. Now you can,
but it's an old animation technique, isn't it? And it's the sort of thing the technique that was used for the Wallace and Gromit films.
Exactly. It's like stop motion with little clay figurines and stuff. But now you're actually using an actor to do it. And this goes way back. This not American Werewolf in London, back to the old Wolfman things back in the 1930s and 40s. This is the way to do it before computers, because you just had to have a very patient actor and very talented makeup artists who are willing to say, just stay in basically the same position and stop the film, change it, start the film up, stop the film, change it, and so on.
But now you have the morphing techniques. How does that work? The computer just keeps on dissolving into the next phase?
Exactly. We now can take and manipulate images like nobody's business. We can really warp images and blend things together inside the computer. And so, I mean, we can change the color of things. We can do all sorts of stuff. And with morphing, what you do is you have one image, perhaps the guy as a normal person, the actor as he is, and then you have another image of the actor as a wolfman. And you probably would actually have multiple in-between images, but for the most part. And then all the artist has to do is say, his eye is here in this image, and his eye is here in the wolfman image, and you identify a couple of points on the image where you say, this corresponds to that, and there's the eye in this image, there's the eye in that, and the computer will actually figure out how to change one image into the other one. And it can do it over a period of time. It can do it over 100 frames or 200 frames, and it can look pretty cool. You can do all sorts of warping kind of things. It's amazing, actually.
Well, a listener, JT on Long Island, says, he wrote in, sometimes it's very obvious that computer effects we use, and sometimes it's seamless. Does this come down to the budget, short deadlines, inexperience of the effects team, or a combination of all?
It really is a combination of all. Certainly the amount of time that we have to work on an effect means the better the effect will be. As production schedules get tighter, you know, movies are coming out constantly now, and it's always a challenge to see how good of an effect we can get in the period of time that the movie is allotted for doing the effects. But also, you know, quite frankly, it's the visual effects industry is always trying to do that thing that nobody has seen before. And sometimes we overreach. You know, we try to do something that, and it becomes obvious that, wow, that doesn't quite work. But it's good enough, at least, or maybe it isn't. If you go back and look at old films from, like, the 1990s, you can see a lot of attempts at computer graphics that looked cool for the time because they were new and fancy. But now you look at them and you go, wow, I can really tell that that's a computer graphics effect. Nowadays, we're getting really good. The films now, you know, are computer. The visual effects in films you recognize as computer-generated, not because they stand out as being computer-generated, but just because you're used to seeing them so much. You go, oh, that's a giant robot on the screen. It looks great, but there's only one way that could be a giant robot on the screen. It's got to be computer-generated.
Well, let's talk about a film you mentioned earlier, or actually three films, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. One of the things they pulled off was a trick of scale. The actors who played hobbits are normal-sized adults, but they appear much smaller on film. Is this the same sort of thing you were talking about earlier? Is it the same sort of thing that we would talk about if we were doing the same actor as twins?
Very similar, actually. The wonderful thing about The Hobbit, and especially the scale size, is that they went old school again. They went back to techniques that were developed a long time ago, and this one particular technique is called forced perspective. Basically what it means is that you can use the camera and basically film a scene from two different vantage points. And if you stick it together correctly, it will look like the same scene, but with different parts of it as scale. And so think about what's happening in the Lord of the Rings. You've got Gandalf, who's a big guy, and then you've got Frodo, who's a little teeny guy, but they're both basically the same size actor. So if you wanted to make Gandalf look huge and Frodo look small, you'd first film Gandalf up close, right? You'd put the camera up close to him, and he'd fill the entire frame. And then you'd back the camera out, put Frodo in so that he looks like he's standing next to Gandalf, but the camera is now farther away, right? So
it's that simple?
Looks smaller on the screen.
Oh, my.
It is that simple. It is actually that simple. The one trick is that everything else in the scene sort of has to be built correctly so that it'll work. So, because think about this. Gandalf is standing next to a table, and he's got his hand on the table. Frodo is standing next to a table, and he's got his hand on the table. So Gandalf needs to be big in one view, and Frodo needs to be small in the one view, but the table has to be the same size. So what they actually do is build the exact same table, big and small. And so when they put them together, it actually looks like it works.
Now, another remarkable special effect from The Lord of the Rings was the creature Gollum. Can you explain that technology?
Well, again, that's very similar to the Benjamin Button kind of thing, where what we do is create a digital version of a character. In Benjamin Button, it was Brad Pitt as he was 80 years old. In Gollum, it was this creature Gollum. And in both cases, they were created inside the computer to look as real as possible. And then the actors that were playing them had markers on their faces that allowed us to capture their performance. This is called motion capture, where we have a whole bunch of cameras pointed at the actors, and we're able to use computer vision techniques basically to figure out how their faces are moving. And then, so the actors are actually doing the performance, and what we have to do is transfer the performance that we've basically captured using this technique onto either the 80-year-old Benjamin Button or the Gollum character in Lord of the Rings.
Or the blue characters in Avatar?
Bingo, exactly. Same technique. And this is very tricky. This is where the expertise of the audience comes into play, where they're really good at noticing faces. And so capturing the data and applying it to a different character is very tricky. It's you don't want to miss some of the subtleties that are going on, or else the audience will catch on to it and they'll go, wait, that doesn't look real, or the lips don't look like they're making the voice of the character.
My guest is Dr. Doug Robel, the creative director of Software, a Digital Domain, the multiple Academy Award-winning visual effects studio in Venice, California. And we're talking about special effects on today's Please Explain. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we will do all of those things, maybe pull off some radio magic after we take a little break. We are back with Dr. Doug Robel, creative director of Software, a Digital Domain, the people who gave us all the special effects in movies like Pirates of the Caribbean, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Star Trek, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Apollo 13. So you've been in the business for a long time, doing many different approaches over the years. You were doing this before there were a lot of computer-generated effects available to you?
No, actually, I came in just as computer graphics and computer-generated imagery was really starting to hit. Back in 1977, Star Wars came out, and I was 14 years old, which was the exact right age to watch Star Wars. And I remember sitting through that movie 21 times during the summer, which, by the way, is not nearly a record. And I realized that's what I wanted to do.
But they were using miniatures, weren't they?
Absolutely.
Which is an earlier approach. That's what George Méliès did.
Exactly. They did miniatures, but the way it worked was they used computer-controlled lifts and cranes and stuff to make sure that it worked the way it should. So there was, even then, they were using computers and electronics to make sure that the miniatures moved the way they should. And I thought, oh, this is what I want to do. I'm so into this. I want to do this. But I knew I wasn't pretty enough to be an actor, and I wasn't talented enough to be an artist. But I saw that the computer was going to be there. And so I spent my education getting computer degrees and learning math and stuff, and after I got my PhD, I jumped into Digital Domain. Just it was forming, and just ran with the computer ever since.
Dr. Robel,
company is called Digital Domain because we basically realized everything was going to be done with the computer back in 1993.
Well, let's take some calls. I have all sorts of other questions to ask you, but our listeners are also excited about talking with you. And our first caller, who's been on the line for a while, is Fritz from the East Village. Hi, Fritz.
Hi. The last time that I went to see a movie, I realized when I was looking up on screen, I wasn't seeing any grain anymore. Does that mean that the movies we're seeing now are shot entirely digital and are being projected digitally?
Correct. Yes.
Does that make your life easier?
It actually does. It does. In fact, one of the things that we have to do, because we generate things in the computer, there's no grain. Grain is all generated by the response of the silver nitrate in the film. And so that's what actual film grain is. It's the chemical behavior of the film. Now that everything is being done with a digital camera, you can notice this on your cameras as well. You take a digital camera nowadays, and your pictures that are coming out are very smooth looking. They don't have any grain. However, back when most films were being filmed with film, we were generating the stuff that we were going to stick into the image, the monsters and the backgrounds and everything, in the computer. There's no grain in the computer. There's grain in the film. And so if we just stuck the computer-generated image into the film, the actor, the picture of Tom Cruise or whatever that has grain, it looked awful because you could see one part was filmed with film and the other part wasn't. It was something that was too smooth, too pretty looking. So we actually had to mimic the grain that was in film. We had to sort of muss up our perfect image so that it fit with what was actually filmed on the set.
Now, a listener asks, how do you deal with preservation and restoration of digital film? Is digital easier or harder to preserve?
Yeah, that is an extraordinarily complicated question. You'd think, oh, well, it's digital. I'll just put it on a computer. But one of the things that film preservationists worry about is, well, how exactly do you do that? I mean, do you write it to a DVD? Well, 100 years from now, will there be devices around that can actually read a DVD?
And the image can deteriorate, can't it? We've
exactly,
seen that with
yeah.
some early digital information systems.
Okay, so the crazy thing is that there is one medium out there that is really good at staying around, and that's film, actual printed film. It lasts for a very long time if you take care of it. So if you keep it in a controlled, humidity-free environment, film has a remarkable shelf life, where it's not measured in tens of years like digital media is. You know, VHS tapes, have you taken a 1990s VHS tape and stuck it in a VHS
yeah.
playback machine?
They get very fuzzy.
Looks awful. Film actually stays really good. And so what they're actually doing nowadays to preserve film is very carefully taking the computer-generated image and placing it on a piece of film and then putting it in a vault, and they know that it will stay around for hundreds of years, actually, if they take care of it. It's a full circle. It's a circle of life, really.
Sheldon in Brooklyn writes in, how are background shots, especially in urban settings, altered to reflect the landscape of a certain time period? For example, a scene that calls for Times Square in the 1970s or the World Trade Center.
Well, this actually really gets what I wanted to mention this. Your previous caller said, hey, sometimes I can see visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with backgrounds, it's actually really interesting. If you stay to the end of almost any film nowadays, even romantic comedies or films that you expect to not have any visual effects, and you watch the credits, you'll see visual effects in there. And what they're doing is that they are basically changing the background of scenes that were filmed that had a problem in them. For instance, say you've got a romantic comedy, and the man and the woman need to be in a park, and it's going to be a sunshiny day, and everything's great. Well, you go to the park, and the day that you've got it all set up to film, it's completely overcast, and it's costing you money because you've got all the lights, and you've got the crew, and everybody's there, and you're just sitting around waiting for the sun to come out. Well, back in the 70s, that's what you had to do. You just waited. Here, nowadays, they say, don't worry about it. Film it. We'll fix it later. So what they do is they film it, and then computer guys and gals will come in later and take out the clouds and put in a blue sky, because that's what the script called for.
Mm-hmm.
And almost every film nowadays has at least some of that kind of visual effect going on, where you don't even notice it.
Yeah,
it's
but
we're so good at doing this that you can't even tell.
But getting back to the question from the listener, if you're putting Times Square from the 1970s or 40s or whatever into a film, you're using film, and the rest of the movie might be shot digitally. So do you have to do a reverse thing to make the scene look like it was shot on film, or do you shoot that part on film?
No, we have computer algorithms that can mimic film. So, again,
mm-hmm.
just like putting back film grain, we can match what was filmed
uh-huh.
to what the computer.
Other than using those fake scratches that we see sometimes, which I
exactly.
really don't love. Leonard from Well, they always look fake. Leonard from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. What I would like to ask our guest is, there are many films like Lord of the Rings and others where one sees the illusion of tens of thousands of hordes of invading monsters as soldiers and whatever, and there are many, many other films where you see, you know it can't be so, that there are actual actors like that. There are maybe 10,000 or more of people, monsters, everything coming to attack a castle, as is the case in Lord of the Rings. And how do they create that? All those figures.
Well, or the people in the stands in Gladiator, or in some movie about a baseball team.
Yeah. This is such a large. You look out and you see it goes to the horizon, and they're varied. Some remember, you know better than I. In the in The Lord of the Rings, there was these enormous monsters carrying these big hammers and little ones and big ones and creatures. I just wonder how they do that.
Well, it's an excellent question, and there's two different kinds of techniques. First of all, the easier one is like you're filming something in a basketball stadium, and you want to populate the stadium with a whole bunch of people that are actually recognizable. Well, what we do nowadays is film just a couple of people sitting in the stands, and then using just clever little image warping techniques, we can replicate them so that they look like they fill the entire studio or the entire stadium. So it becomes much cheaper for us. All we have to do is hire 20 or 30 different-looking people, film them sitting in different spots, and then the computer can just
replicate them. Has SAG complained about this?
I think it's just the reality.
This is like canned music in a Broadway show.
And you've been watching this for a decade, and you haven't noticed. Now, the listener asked about Lord of the Rings, and the crowds of people, the monstrous hordes of creatures attacking something. This is the sort of the heart of computer graphics. What happens is that modelers, like I said at the beginning, create the characters, and then animators will animate the characters. But then you think, just like your listener did, holy smokes, there's 100,000 characters on the scene. How is it possible that we have enough people to actually animate each and every one of those guys? Well, we don't. What we do is we animate a couple and then teach the computer how to do it. And so the computer knows how a big character can run, and then the computer knows how a little character can run. And then we say, hey, computer, here are 100,000 different shaped characters. You know how to make them run. Make them all run to the left. And the computer basically says, oh, okay, I can do this. It's going to take a little bit of time. And it goes and sits for about an hour and tries to figure out exactly how to do it. But then, at the end of it, you have this huge mass of people all running to the left. It's very cool. It still requires people. You need actual talented people to tell the computer how people, the characters are moving, because some of the large giants move differently than the little teeny guys, and so there's a lot of artistry involved in it. But then the computer takes over and does the replication through the thousands and thousands of characters in the scene.
Now, Dr. Rubble, there are so many other things we haven't been able to get to, blue screens, green screens, bullet time, whatever. Maybe we're going to have to do a follow-up somewhere down the line. But I did want to ask you about a couple of things you've been involved with. In 1999, you won a Scientific and Technical Achievement Academy Award for your 3D tracking scene reconstruction program called Track. Can you tell us how that works? And we don't have a lot of time, unfortunately.
It's actually pretty easy. So, say I'm going to film a scene with an actor, let's say like Tom Cruise, and he's fighting a monster. So you have Tom on set, and he's, playing like he's fighting somebody. But the monster isn't actually there, right? So the computer needs to, we're eventually going to put the monster in the scene and place it so that it looks like it's fighting with Tom Cruise. In order to do that, we need to know where the camera was when the scene was filmed with Tom. And we need to know exactly where it was, because if we film the monster later and the camera is off, it's not pointing in the same direction.
We have to leave it here.
The monster isn't going to look like it fits with Tom Cruise.
I never couldn't even get to your thing about Tupac Shakur, but maybe the next time. Dr. Doug Roble, Creative Director of Software at Digital Domain, the multiple Academy Award-winning visual effects studio in California. Thank you so much for being on Please Explain today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It was great.